Peter, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. Jesus replied, Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you? Then he said to them, Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. And he told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. Then he said, This is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, You have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich towards God. Here ends the reading, and I'll pass over to Ying to give us the sermon.
Am I unmuted now? Just to give me a thumbs up. Fantastic. I can't see many people because I've got the screen of my my slides, but that's about it. Well, firstly, let me say again, welcome to 9:15. Welcome to CCC, the very first time. As I said, it's just great being here back at Milton's Point, and I am so looking forward to seeing everyone once again. I have to say it's actually quite weird preaching because I'm so used to preaching from a computer. I can't see all the faces, so I'm going to take on faith value that on just face value that everything's going okay. And I think Ivy and Justin will probably text me if something's going wrong. But I'm having to learn new skill set all over. I've got my iPad here, got a mic. I'm trying to work out all the screens. So if things are getting a bit funny along the way, just give me a bit of grace. We'll get it right, okay? Well, today we're going to look at this topic of, we're going through the parable of the rich fool, right? But the theme today is your money or your life. Now, we sort of heard the phrase a lot of times, your money or your life. I think for most of us, when we think of something like that, we don't really equate the two, your money or life, right? We don't ever think about that sort of thing. But the truth of the matter is, I think a lot of us, we think that our money is the key to our life, right? We think our money is the key to our life. And is that the case? Well, we want to look at that sort of idea today in the parable of the rich fool. And there are four simple points that I want to highlight today. Four simple points. And these are the simple points. Now, for those in the chapel, they might be a bit small because I was setting this up for the computer. I've got to redesign the whole thing when we start getting back into physical meetings again. But there are four simple points that I'm going to zip through today. Well, let's have a look at the first point. First point is this. Doing the right thing can often be driven by wrong motives. Doing the right thing can often be driven by wrong motives. Have a look at the passage that's read to us today, verses 13 to 14, right? You've got this sort of familiar story here of a father's passed away. There's a complaint, there's a battle for the will and inheritance. And a guy calls out, you know, to Jesus, look, this guy, my brother's not doing the right thing by me. Could you tell him to just divvy up the sort of inheritance or the assets? He's simply asking for his fair share of the goods. Now, of course, this is not the only time we've had battles about money, inheritance, and things like that. It happens all the time, doesn't it? And I'm pretty sure that you've heard stories of family members where they're fighting over their will or inheritance. And I would not be surprised if it's also been in your own personal experience, right? It happens all the time. Now, in many ways when you look at it, what the guy's actually asking Jesus is not necessarily wrong. He just simply wants his fair share of the inheritance. Who wouldn't want that? If your parents have passed away, then it's understandable that you get your fair share, and it seems like his brother was cheating on him. So what he's actually asking for is not necessarily wrong. So he turns to Jesus to get some help. And what is Jesus' response? Well, have a look at Jesus' response there in verse 14. Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you? In other words, what's Jesus saying here? Jesus said, let's get things right, kiddo. I did not come here to be your financial manager. I did not come here to sort out your bank balance or sort out the squabble between you about money. I have come here to deal with a much bigger problem that you have to deal with, right? And it's not your money. What is the problem that he's got to deal with that you have? And the problem is really his heart. You know, the saying that I often use, the heart of the problem is the problem of the heart. So what is the problem? The big, big problem that Jesus come to deal with, and the big problem says that you have a much bigger problem than just your bank balance. What is it? Well, the problem is his own greed. That is his problem. It's greed. In other words, he's asking for the right thing to be treated fairly, to have the right, you know, just to have his fair share of the assets from his parents. What he's asking for is right, but why he's asking for it is wrong, because it's driven by greed. Nothing more and nothing less. You see, the first point that we need to always get right as we look through this story here is that doing the right thing, and I think a lot of us do the right thing, can often be driven from wrong motives. And that's the case with this guy. He was actually asking the right thing, but it was driven from the wrong motive, the motive of greed. This leads to my second point then. And what's the second point? And the second point is this, that greed is often more subtle than we realize it. Often more subtle than we realize it. Notice what else Jesus goes on to say in this passage here, in his statement to this guy. He says, watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. But notice the little but often overlooked phrase you see in verse 15. All kinds of greed. All kinds of greed. In other words, there is the obvious greed that we can smell a mile away, right? We can see the greed that everyone else sees, can't we? The Boxing Day sale and everyone just rushes over to the counter, just grab things. We can see the obvious greed like that of the famous Gordon Gekko in Wall Street, where he cries out, greed is good. There is a greed which we can spot a mile away. There's a greed we can see everywhere, say, oh, that person's a greedy person, oh, that person's greedy, I'm a greedy person, whatever. But there's often a greed which is all more subtle, much more normal, and dare I say the sort of greed which is much more acceptable, but nevertheless it is still greed. Greed. Because Jesus says, you've got to watch out for all kinds of greed. Well, what is greed? Well, listen to what Paul, Paul who's a major writer in the New Testament, says about greed. Listen to this phrase in verse 5. What does he say? How does he describe a greedy person? A greedy person is what? An idolater. That is what a greedy person is. If you are worshipping an idol, you are greedy. If you are greedy, you basically are an idolater. Remember what I said in a previous sermon, right? What is an idol? An idol is something you enjoy. An idol is when something you enjoy becomes something you worship. So the thing itself is not wrong. You enjoy it, But it becomes an idol when you, what? Worship it. And so that, what is idolatry? Idolatry is turning God's good gifts into gods themselves. That's what idolatry is. It's taking the good things that God has given us, but turning them into gods that we serve and that we worship. And if you remember a few weeks ago, I spoke of the modern idols. What are some of these modern idols? Well, you can see that there. Let me look at the screenshot here. Family, money, power, comfort, success, fame. Now, when you think about that, right, these things are not necessarily wrong in themselves, right? When you think about money, it's not wrong. But it becomes an idol. It becomes something that you become greedy about. Because it's not something that you can enjoy, use for yourself, but you want more and more and more and more. Fame itself, well, when you think about it, it's not wrong to want to be popular. But you can so want to be popular that you will always do things in order to make a name for yourself. You want to do things not because it's good, but it draws attention to yourself. See, that's greed. That's idolatry. Wanting popular is not necessarily wrong itself, but when it becomes an idol, it becomes all-consuming, so much so that all you ever do is only ever to make a name for yourself. And so when you do something and no one acknowledges you for it, what do? You get angry. When you do something good, you're not doing it because you want to help. You want to do it because you are greedy. Because you have now fallen trap of worshipping popularity. Wanting to be loved is not necessarily a bad thing. We all were created for love. But love can become an idol itself, so much so that you're always looking out for someone to love you. Always wanting the attention of other people. Wanting affirmation. Enjoying a good lifestyle is not necessarily a bad thing. But it can become an idol. It can become a form of greed. A respectable form of greed, so much so that you're not even prepared to sacrifice your lifestyle to serve others. That you therefore will work, work, work in order to feed your lifestyle. What does Jesus say here? Jesus warns us against every kind of greed. As I said, greed is more often subtle than we realize it. Because at the heart of greed, what is it? Is idolatry. It's taking good things, turning them into gods. That leads to my third point then. Greed or consumerism cannot save us. See, what is the clearest expression of greed? Well, when you think about it, the clearest expression of greed is what we call consumerism. Consumerism. Well, listen to what Jesus describes. How does Jesus describe consumerism? Which is really our modern day description of consumerism. What does it say here? Life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. But what is the consumeristic motto? The consumeristic motto is life does consist. It does consist in the abundance of your possession. It does consist. Just think about it, right? We think through that the more that we have, the happier we will be. The more that we, more money we have, the happier we'll be. Why do you think we have such our Boxing Day sales? Why do you think we are constantly working our butt off to accumulate more things? Because we think that the more that we have, the better we will be. But it doesn't just have to be material possessions. Just think about the things that you are constantly anxious about. That is a that reveals to you what you're actually what is important to you in life. What makes up your life. Just think about the things that you become angry about. Just think about those sorts of things. Just think about the things that you argue about, right? I still remember many years ago when I was a young Christian, I was challenged to start preaching the gospel to all my school friends at school. So I did that. I spent a lot of time talking to all my friends about Jesus. And I kept saying that life is found in knowing Jesus, not in anything else. When it came to HSC time, it was a pretty bad time because I studied my guts out and I thought I was going to do really, really well. But for some strange reason, everything just fell apart. I just didn't get the questions right. My mind was having mental blackouts, so to speak. And you know what happened as a result of that? I was in complete depression, anxiety, worried that I would fail. Now, what does that say? You know what that says? Although on the one hand I say that Jesus is your life, yet my fear, my anxiety, my depression, my always constant worrying about whether I was going to be successful in my HSC revealed my heart and showed to me that what was more important to me, more than even Jesus, was actually being successful in my HSC. You see, you think about the things that we worry about. We worry about work. We worry about our relationships. We worry about money. We worry about whether my car will actually make that distance. We worry about this. We worry about these sorts of things. And the things that we worry about, the things that we fight about, the things that we argue about, really reveal the things that's most important to you in life. You see, it's not just consumerism in terms of crass materialism, but it's often even a subtle form of materialism, just the things that we worry about. Because at the end of the day, we keep saying our subtitle writing in our heart is, success is my life. Money is my life. Being good, being able to increase my, passing my exam is my life. Being able to do that hobby is my life. If I can't do that, then there is no point in life. And what does Jesus have to say about all this? What does he have to say about all this? And this is what he has to say. He says no. He says no. You see, the point that he wants to say here, the third point, is simply this. That greed and consumerism cannot save us. It cannot save us. So here's the problem with greed and consumerism. This, which leads me to my fourth point. And what is my fourth point? It is simply this. That life is ultimately found in God and in God alone. You see, the problem with consumerism, what is the problem with consumerism? Why is it that we cannot find life in these sorts of things, but only in God alone? Because the truth of the matter is that all these sorts of things, they come and they go. Things that we put our life in eventually get old and tired, so we've got to find the next thing. And that eventually gets old and tired, then we trash it. We bound our life in the cars that we get, and then it gets old and tired, we throw it away, then we've got to buy another one. And then another one with this endless treadmill trying to buy more and more and more, that in the end, all these things we throw away. Some people, their body is everything to them, their looks is everything to them, but their body is constantly degrading. Their work, sometimes they put all their energy into their work because their work is their life, but eventually they discover that they're losing their brains, they're losing their skills, and the younger ones who come over and take over their jobs. The things that we invest in are the things that come and go. We live in basically a throwaway society. Well, to highlight the truth of this, Jesus tells a simple story of the rich fool. The rich fool. And it's a story that's not hard to understand. We're just going to look at it very quickly. Not hard to understand. He gets rich. And he's rich, but he even gets richer. And so as he discovers his business is booming, the ground is producing the good stuff, and he expands his business. But as the story goes on, suddenly he just dies on the spot. It could be either heart attack or stroke, but either way, he suddenly dies. He's a dead person and then faces judgment. That's the story in a nutshell. And the story itself is quite easily read and understood, right? But I want to draw a few things about this story which Jesus tells us. Notice the first thing he says about this story, right? His assessment of the guy. Notice the assessment that Jesus makes about this guy. It might be small for you guys. Can you guys see it there? Or is it a bit small? Okay. Notice Jesus' assessment of this guy. You see that little phrase there? It should come up there. What does it say? You fool. That's his assessment. It's quite an astonishing assessment, isn't it? Everyone in our society will look at this guy. His business is booming. He's expanding. He is rich beyond belief. He can just enjoy life. And Jesus says, you're an absolute idiot. You're an absolute idiot. This guy's an idiot, to say the least. You know, I've met parents in this church whose big passion for their kids is just to be successful at school, to get the good job, to make a good income, to build a good life. And you know what Jesus is saying to these parents? You're absolutely crazy. You are setting up your kids to be absolute losers as far as God's concerned. The world might applaud them, but God says you're absolute losers. You're killing your kids. And I know people here, I've seen people here whose passions, you know, they come to church every Sunday, do their religious duty, put their money in the sort of offertory bag and things like that, go home, their life is just consumed by their work and business and just building a good, comfortable lifestyle. And what does Jesus say? You are an absolute fool. Absolute fool. Can I say here pretty bluntly that if you're in that category, you're an idiot. You are absolutely stupid if you think that your whole life is all about your work, growing your business, building a comfortable lifestyle. Sure, you do the religious duties of coming to church and putting your money in the bag and listening to sermon and go home and back to business and so on. If that is your life, Jesus says you're stupid. It's a pretty strong word. Now, why is that? 3 points Jesus wants to highlight to illustrate this point. Point one is this, right? Point one. 3 things that this guy did not get. The first point, he didn't get that everything he has comes from God and not from anything he did. Not from anything he did. Have a look at the passage again, the story. Have a look at the story in the parable, right? And I want you to notice a little phrase here, how Jesus described the expansion of his business. How did he get his expansion? The ground yielded an abundant harvest. Not that little thing. The ground yielded an abundant harvest. What is Jesus trying to say here? This guy did not earn a dime. He did not get his blessings because he's so smart and hardworking. He did not get his blessing because he's so good with his hands and so brilliant with his mind. He didn't get it by anything he did. Everything he got is a gift from God. And that's the point that Jesus said. The ground yielded an abundant harvest. And this is the point that this guy didn't get. He thought it was his hard work, but no. It is a gift from God. A complete gift from God. And that's a thing that we need to understand ourselves. If you think that everything you have is because of your hard work, because of your brains, because of your skill, Jesus says you're an idiot. You just don't get it. Everything you have comes from God. It's a gift from God because Jesus never said anything about what he did or earned it. It's a gift from God. But that leads us to our second point. And what's the second point? He didn't get it that just as God freely gave, he can freely take it away. Look at what it says here You see in the passage there. But God said to him, you fool. See that phrase, you fool. This very night you'll be your life will be demanded from you. If it's a gift from God, he can easily take it away and there's nothing you can do about it. You did not get it because you're great, smart, brilliant brain. You didn't get it because you're so good with your hands. You got it simply because it's a gift from God. And he gave it to you freely. He can take it away as easily. You know, we can, if you're old enough, and I think the kids here in the chapel are not that old, but there was a time of the global financial crisis when the world was plunged into, as it says, a global financial crisis. People saved millions into their super and bank investments, and then overnight the whole thing had been lost, complete loss. Or one can think of just recently what we've been going through the last 2 years, the COVID pandemic. People made their big plans and the whole thing got just thrown out the window. You know, we know that we are not in control of things. We know that things that we build up can be easily lost. That's why we take out insurance. I still remember very clearly. Many years ago, one of our members, he was doing well in the business world, stock markets, his own business. And I was meeting up with him to read the Bible. And then he discovered he had cancer. And you know what happened? He all changed around and now he was using all his money not to expand his business, but to try and find a cure for his cancer. He went overseas, went to this doctor, that doctor, but in the end it was no use. Eventually he died of cancer. You see, the problem that we fail to realize, and this guy didn't get it, and many of us didn't get it, is that all that we have is a gift from God, and just as easily and freely gives it to us, he can easily and quickly take it away from us. And there's nothing we can do about it. And that leads me to my third point. He didn't get it that the bigger picture that life is ultimately found in God and in God alone. Listen to what Jesus says here. This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves but is not rich towards God. This is what it will be for whoever stores up things for themselves but is not rich towards God. In other words, you are just a complete fool, is what Jesus says, if you are like this and you're not rich towards God. What does it mean to be rich towards God? And it simply means we need to be earning his favor. That's what it means. To be rich towards God means to earn his favor. Jesus puts it like this later on in the story. He goes on in verses 27 to 31 to talk about how God is the one. Again, he reaffirms that God is the one who gives you all these things. But look what he says here in verse 31. In verse 31 it says, seek his kingdom and these things will be given to you as well. What is Jesus saying here? In another gospel, Jesus makes it even more explicit that seek first his kingdom. All these things will be given to you. What does it mean to seek his kingdom? What does it mean to seek his kingdom? Well, to seek his kingdom is to seek to be right with God. That's what it means. To seek his kingdom means to seek to love and serve him above all else. Not to serve the things of this world, but to serve God. To seek his kingdom is to honor him above all things, not to self. To seek him means to know him first and foremost as the chief desire of your heart. To seek first his kingdom is to proclaim his name as the one who needs to reclaim. To obey him. That's what it means to seek first his kingdom. And then Jesus says this, and all these things will be given to you. Now, let's be clear. When Jesus says all these things will be given to you, I think he has much more in mind than just food and water and clothing. I think he certainly says that. He will care for the needs of all his people. But I think he has something much, much more in mind. So much more. Have a look at what he says here. Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourself that will not wear out. Know that? A treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroy. And what is Jesus saying? He's saying, I'll take care of you in this world. I will take care of you in this world. And history testifies the way that God continues to take care of his people. But Jesus says, I want to give you so much more than what the world can ever. I want to give you treasures. I want to give you riches. I want to give you delights. I want to give you joy that nothing in the world can ever match. I want to give you a rich, rich life. I want to give you heaven itself. Have a look at verse 32. Verse 32. This is a stunning promise that Jesus says. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you what? The kingdom. Here's the crazy thing. You know, we're chasing cars. We're chasing that bank balance. We're chasing that good-looking body. We're chasing that house that in the end we've got to get rid of because we're going to go into a nursing home. Jesus says, I want to give you the kingdom. That's crazy. I want to give you the kingdom. I want to give you heaven itself. You know how consumerism works? This is how it works. It works on the fact that things will wear out and therefore you never been content and you've got to go more, buy more and more and more. That's why we're never content. But Jesus says, get right with God and I'll give you life. Life. This is what Jesus says. This is Jesus says in another passage. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come, now get this, that they may have life. And what? Life to the full. Life to the full. Now pause and think of a moment. See, that's why we don't need to be greedy. What is greed? It's idolatry. Greed is the thing that you want more and more because it's not something you enjoy, but now you have to worship. See, if you understand, if you have been given the life of Jesus, you don't need to be greedy for money. You know why? Because Jesus can give you the heaven itself. You don't need to be greedy for popularity. Why? Because Jesus says your name is all written in the book of life. Its name is there in heaven. You don't need to be greedy for love. Love is a good thing, but you don't need to be greedy for constantly pining for love, for attention, for people to affirm you. But you know why? Because you have the love of the infinite Father with you without end. You don't need to be greedy for constant acknowledgement. You know why? Because God says, I see what you're doing and I will reward you even if no one else sees you. You don't need to be greedy to maintain this sort of lifestyle. You can give it away. You know why? God says, I will give you treasures that are beyond your imagination. You see, life is not found in the abundance of our possessions. What is it found in? Well, life is found in God and in God alone who satisfies us fully. We know the well-known saying of the famous young missionary who passed away. It's been mentioned so many times. It's gone down in history as one of the greatest sayings. He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain that which he cannot lose. He is no fool. This man was an absolute fool because giving up the thing that would last forever for things that he cannot keep. Now, how idiotic is that? So what is the passage calling us to do? Simply this. Seek first his kingdom. Seek first his kingdom. Seek first to be right with God. Seek first to know God. Seek first to obey him and to love him. Seek first to serve him. Seek first to adore him. Seek first to proclaim him. Seek first to know him, for to know him is to know life in all its richness. Oh, let me close in prayer. Father in heaven, Father, would you just guard us from every kind of greed, not just the obvious one we can see and smell a mile away, but the subtle ones which are more acceptable in our heart but is still greed. It is idolatry. Help us to know that life is found in knowing you and you alone. Help us therefore to seek first his kingdom above all else. In Jesus' name, amen. Over to you, Wailita.
Seek first.